Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up over the next half hour, Lebanon awaits Pope Benedict. We speak to the local churchman who's coordinating the papal visit this September. Making the Pope's wish list come true. Shining the spotlight on the Papal Foundation, a group of U.S.-based philanthropists who fund the Pope's favorite charities. And the descendants of former slaves in Brazil. A local bishop tells us of new challenges on the horizon. The coordinator of the papal visit to Lebanon was part of a Lebanese church delegation to come to Rome this week to fine-tune preparations for Pope Benedict XVI's September 14th through 16th journey. Father Marwan Tabet, the former Secretary General for Catholic Schools in Lebanon, was appointed by the Maronite Patriarchal See in Lebanon to organize the papal itinerary together with Vatican officials. The highlight of the three-day papal visit will come at a big mass on September 16th, when Pope Benedict will sign the Apostolic Exhortation, the papal document that follows the 2010 Synod of Bishops of the Middle East.
I must say that the Lebanese population, Christian and Muslim, had heard that the Pope will be coming to Lebanon. They were expecting something to happen. They didn't know the date, the form, or the content. So when the news broke on Easter Day, there was a lot of happiness coming with the Easter message. As you may know, and as everyone know, that the Lebanese are very attached to Rome and to the Papal See, especially to the popes. The Lebanese had experienced the euphoria of a papal visit with John Paul II. And they are waiting as well for this visit of Benedict XVI.
Vatican Radio coordinators and technical teams have met Father Tabet together with Father Abdo Boukassem, director of the Catholic Information Center of the Maronite Church and media coordinator for the visit, as well as Father Hani Matar of the Maronite Patriarchal Liturgical Commission, responsible for preparing the liturgical celebrations for the Holy Father while in Lebanon. The delegation also met with other Vatican officials, including Archbishop Niccolò Eterovich, Secretary General of the Vatican Office for the Synod of Bishops, charged with preparing the post-synodal exhortation.
For the preparations, we are forward with the preparations. We met with the officials in the Vatican charged of these files. The Pope will stay in Lebanon 3 days, 2 nights. And in the book of whoever knows how things happen, we know that's a long trip for the Pope. And during this time, he will be meeting with officials because it's an official visit to the country of Lebanon. He will be meeting the political officials. He will be addressing the people of culture and writers, people from the public sector and the private sector. He will be meeting with the youth. We're preparing for a big encounter for the Pope with the youth.
Pope Benedict will also be meeting Muslim religious and political leaders, as well as the heads of the Orthodox and Protestant churches in Lebanon and across the Middle East.
Many personalities from all around the Middle East and North Africa will be present to welcome the Pope, to listen to what he's going to say. This part of the world is passing now through a very critical moment.
I was going to say, you have a very delicate situation on your border there with what's happening in Syria. In fact, some people were putting into question
what's happening in Syria, what's happening with Israel. On both sides, Lebanon is not happy. The problem in Syria is reflecting badly on the Lebanese economy, and people are waiting to see what's going to happen. The border with Israel is not always safe as well. The whole region is boiling at this stage. It was called the Arab Spring, mm-hmm. but I guess now we have to reconsider whether it is an Arabic Spring or these revolutions have affected the social material of the existence of the ethnic groups in Lebanon, especially the Christians. The presence of the Christians in the East now is again under a big question. We have to wait for the whole situation to settle to see where the Christian will be at this stage.
Father Tabet acknowledges the Church in Rome's concern for events unfolding in the region and expresses gratitude that Vatican officials are in frequent contact with the local churches in the Middle East.
Rome is really watching with carefully the progress of what's happening, and they have a position toward that, and the Pope personally is concerned with the presence of the Christians in the East. That's why we see in his speeches he always comes back to the presence and he's giving directives. We know that on the level of the Curia, the Secretary d'Etat as well, they are watching carefully what's going on in that region, and the heads of the dicasteries who are in charge of the area are always in contact. And this visit is going to have a special dimension. We are waiting to see what the Pope will have to say besides signing the apostolic exhortation.
What do you think people are looking forward to the Pope to say about what's happening in their region?
Rome's position on political situation, especially in the East, has been very clear since a long time. Rome looks for peace between people, looks for conviviality between ethnic groups. Rome wants that the Christian in the East remain there because they are from the material of the area. They are the natives. They are among the composites of the area. It's very clear. The message of Rome, the position of Rome is very clear. Now, how the political situation develops and what Rome does at that stage, that has to be asked to the officials in Rome. It's not my job to answer that.
But how will the Lebanese and Christians from the region receive Pope Benedict this September?
On behalf of the Lebanese Catholic Church and all Lebanese, we would like to say to the Pope and the papal suite that will be accompanying him, welcome to Lebanon. You will be stepping on holy ground. We look forward to you as our father and as the protector of Catholicism. Lebanon is your country. We know it's in your heart, and we would like you to know that you are in ours as well.
Father Marwan Tabet, coordinating the papal visit to Lebanon. Charitable institutions around the world support the Catholic Church through acts of charity across the globe. Many come straight off the Pope's very own wish list. Just one of these charitable organizations, the U.S.-based Papal Foundation, was set up in 1988 as a response to a desire for a unique and sustainable way to support the Holy Father and his witness in the world. The Foundation's lay men and women members, who are known as Stewards of St. Peter, meet annually with the Holy Father and present him a donation derived from the income generated by their Foundation's investments. In April 2012, the Foundation presented the Pope with $8.5 million to support charitable projects particularly close to his heart. While the fund supports some 105 programs in nearly 50 nations on four continents, grants have included $500,000 to construct five schools in Egypt and $43,000 for the construction of a healthcare facility and maternity clinic in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Other projects include a soup kitchen in the Ukraine, the construction of a church in Angola, a health center in Malawi, and a new seminary in Peru. Bishop Michael Bransfield of Charleston, Wheeling, West Virginia, is the president of the Papal Foundation. We caught up with him on a recent visit to Rome as he was accompanying the stewards on their annual pilgrimage to the See of Peter. Emer McCarthy asked him about how the foundation works, what makes a steward, and what are some of the things on Pope Benedict's wish list.
Early in the 1980s, John Paul II had a lot of charities that he was not able to fund and a lot of concerns in Eastern Europe and throughout the world. So the cardinals that were his friends that were concerned and archbishops that were concerned about him from the United States said he had asked for their help. So it was their idea, Cardinal Kroll and her others and Cardinal McCarrick. A lot of them got together and Cardinal Kroll led them and they set up in Philadelphia and started. But it went throughout our country immediately because the archbishops and cardinals backed him up and brought in members. So if you walk in that room, it's a mixture of our country.
It really is. They're from everywhere, aren't they?
Everywhere. So the cardinals put together this organization and they asked the people to give the money, $1 million each, $1 million a couple, that would stay in the United States. And the money that came from that, the income and different grants, would come to the Holy Father for the poor of the world and for his charities or for works that he wanted done. So he was not totally restricted. He sends a list over, and in November we meet in Washington, and it's been reviewed by the Grants Committee, then it's reviewed again by the board, and they approve what they can fund and what we do for the Holy Father. They make the choices, and because the wish list gets longer and longer.
This is something that needs to be underlined. A lot of people, every year when the Holy Father meets the Papal Foundation and they hear of a check being handed over, they seem to think that the money stays in Rome. It doesn't. It's not for Rome. It's for the Holy Father's intention for the Universal Church. So can you speak to us perhaps about some of the projects that are being funded?
Oh, sure. We're funding, a great deal went to Haiti when that happened. Right now, a lot will go to Africa. Their sisters, Mother Teresa's sisters, we try to help the projects they're involved in. So there are ways that we reach out to where the different projects Mother Teresa's sisters are in, because they don't take the money directly, but we can help where they're running a charity. And as we said in there, the Seamen Scholars, so there are scholars that stay, that come in like from poor countries, in Africa, and they study here and then they go back. So those scholarships go are members of the Papal Foundation. So there are clinics all over, there are places in Eastern Europe. It's just really a wonderful opportunity for the Holy Father. But he responds throughout the world. He doesn't restrict it. But I would say most of the money goes to poor situations. Could be Central America, could be Mexico, could be Africa. And they're just wonderful projects.
It's very, as you pointed out, walking inside in that room there, we have stewards from Newark, we have stewards from Boston, we have stewards from Colorado, we have stewards from Texas, from all over. But not only, we have generations of stewards. So this is obviously something that is not only growing, it's being passed on from generation to generation. How important is the work that they're doing in their as a vocation in itself?
Some of them have been very, very involved with the foundation for many years. And for them, it is a vocation. They see this as an ability to take the successor of Peter and give him a helping hand to do the things he wants to do that otherwise would be difficult to do. Because the administration of the Vatican, the embassies throughout the world, all the bills he gets automatically, does not always enable him to do the charitable works that are close to his heart. So these men and women really feel that they are a part of what the Holy Father can do as a successor of St. Peter. They really feel a part of the church at its center and of the successor of Peter. I mean, it's a very spiritual enterprise, but at the same time, these are extremely charitable people that like the fact that they're reaching out to the poor. But they're very, very concerned that the Holy Father can do it and that he can say yes to many people because of them.
The United States is such an active church on so many levels, and not only on, shall we say, a level of formation, because we've seen really the U.S. setting a standard for formation in a lot of the Anglophone world, not only in its laity becoming more proactive, looking at the Papal Foundation and the work that these people do, putting their faith into practice, and looking ahead at the Holy Father's Year of Faith and new evangelization. What would you say to try and encourage people in their own little way? Okay, they can't do it on the same level as the Papal Foundation, but in their own little way, to realize that they too can help the Holy Father in his universal mission.
Well, I think our people are devoted to the Holy Father. In other words, John Paul II or Benedict XVI, so that they can pray for him, they can support him in his teaching, in his reading, he's just been very prolific in writing, and I think the people can really really stay very close to this Holy Father by what they do in their own churches, by the loyalty they show the Holy Father in their own choices, by their ability to teach others about what he's saying and to repeat what he's saying in the world today. I just think this is one of the most intelligent popes we've had. People can get his books. People can be close to him that way. But when they reach out, they also know that it's the Roman Catholic Church. We put the name right there for everybody to see. And that means the Bishop of Rome, that means the successor of Peter. And it's good for our people to verbalize that, because sometimes we can forget it. Sometimes we can forget. And so it's good for our own people to connect his title to who he is, and then to let other people know spiritually. When you see these people in here, they're very, very affected just by the fact that that man walks into the room. They're very affected by every word and every gesture, and because they are faithful people. They just are people who know what the successor of Peter means to the world and what Peter did for Christ and we want to do for Peter's successors.
The 19th is, of course, the 7th anniversary of his election as Pope, as successor of St. Peter. If I can just ask for a quick comment on these 7 years of Pope Benedict XVI's pontificate and your own wishes to the Holy Father.
Yeah, I think the Holy Father has been here at a very pivotal time in world history. I think he's given a great deal of attention to the secularization of Europe. He's been very clear on what he expects of believing people. I think that he has been able to speak to a very sophisticated part of our society and tell them what faith dimension life is like and the difference it makes. I think that his theological background has been enabling him to address the 21st century. So these 7 years have been within this century at a very pivotal transition from a very beloved Holy Father to a beloved, very intelligent Holy Father who wants to teach and who wants to write and who also has followed the pilgrimage traveling of John Paul II and finds himself recently in Mexico and Cuba, surrounded by the poor, but also working with the leadership and wealthier people to do something for the poor. So I think it's just phenomenal that this man at 85 years of age can go to Mexico and Cuba within a short period of time and be planning his next trip after him. It's just a great example for the world to see. A lot of people live a long time in our world today, much different than before. And so these years can be fruitful, and the Holy Father's proving.
Foundation also offers Seaman scholarships for theological studies in Rome for some 60 seminarians, priests, religious, and lay people from 23 developing nations in order that they may return to their home nations equipped to teach the faith. Sister Frances of the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Mother of Christ, says she is an example of how investing in the future of one person means investing in the future of an entire nation. Sister Frances is from northern Nigeria and is a recipient of a Seaman scholarship founded by the Papal Foundation stewards John and Carol Seaman. Well, years ago, the Seamans asked Pope John Paul II where their donation would be best invested. He replied, in the future of developing nations, more specifically, in giving young men and women, religious and lay, access to top-level education. Sister Frances tells Emer that the scholarship opened up a whole new chapter in her life.
This scholarship has really helped me a lot. Before I got this scholarship, I really suffered for the problem of accommodation here in Rome. Actually, I was afraid when I was offered to do this course in psychology, because knowing that I didn't have a nearby community, I was really afraid. But the moment I was given this scholarship, I felt at least a little bit of ease to concentrate and do the course. I belong to the congregation of the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Mother of Christ. It's a very big congregation. We have many sisters, about 1,000 sisters now. It's also not a very old congregation, as we would imagine other congregations. We were found in 1937 by Archbishop Charles Heary. He was a missionary to Nigeria and eventually became a bishop in Nigeria, and eventually found a congregation for the upliftment of womanhood and for the training of young girls and children. And we work in hospitals, in the orphanages and in schools, training the young children, young girls, young boys, not just the academically, but religiously, spiritually, to know God.
It's very important, the work that you're doing over here then, studying psychology. How will that benefit your work, your mission, your life, and the church back in Nigeria among your sisters?
Yes, the study of psychology is going to be of immense benefit to us, not to me specifically, to me in particular, I mean to have known myself a little bit, and then to help my congregation and the church in Nigeria. In the congregation, we have many candidates, we have many vocations to religious life. For example, in our apostolate, we have about 40 candidates who aspire to be sisters. In the novitiate, we have there about 40 candidates who aspire to be sisters. So we need competent hands, somebody who is well informed spiritually, psychologically, academically, who will be able to help these young girls in their process of formation. So I think I will help in the area of formation when I go back to Nigeria, and not just only in the formation houses. I could also give a helping hand in the seminaries, like the psychological assessment of the candidates who wish to be priests. I could also help in the spiritual direction, because our psychology here at Gregorian opens us, gives us many opportunities to work. And then I could also give a help in the parishes, like family therapy, giving family therapy, or giving psychological therapies also to people who have problems, or for marriages that have difficulties, or people and families that have separated. So I have so many areas I could help when I go back to Nigeria.
It's one example of how one scholarship for one person can help so many other people.
This scholarship from the Papa Foundation, I've gotten, is going to be a very big help to so many other people in Nigeria. The people I'm going to meet when I go back. I'm so happy about the scholarship, and I pray that God will continue to bless all the people who are in one way or the other involved in the Papa Foundation, because they are really helping us.
Sister Frances of the Sisters of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Mother of Christ. And earlier, we heard Bishop Michael Bransfield of Charleston, Wheeling, West Virginia. Well, our next guest comes from the Order of Friars Minor. Bishop Elias Manning of Valença, Brazil, told Vatican Radio's Silvone Prots that he's concerned about new challenges facing one of Brazil's ethnic communities, the descendants of former slaves. He also tells us about how his diocese is looking ahead to World Youth Day in Rio 2013. Let's listen.
The special challenges that at present are presented for the church in Brazil continue to be the defense of the poor. We see these days, in recent days, the challenge of seeing the black people who live in what we call quilombos here in Brazil. There's a movement now on the part of the government to say that the lands that they live on and have been living on for years, the black population, the descendants of the slaves, that the farm owners in the area, plantation owners, have rights over these lands that have been for years in the hands of the descendants of the slaves. The CNBB has taken a position to defend the rights of those who have possessed the lands for years. There's a law here in Brazil where if a person possesses peacefully for more than 5 years a piece of land, they have a right to that land. And these descendants of the slaves have been in on the land for much more than 5 years, years and years. And fortunately, the church, this is one of the challenges the church is facing at present here in Brazil, the defense of the Indians, the indigenous in the Amazon area. The same thing is happening where their lands have been taken over the years by farm plantation owners, and many who are in political positions in government. On a social line, these are some of the challenges the church is facing. On other levels, the defense of values which the Christians, the Catholics, have had for over years, simple things like defending religious education in the schools. There's always been, recent years, a tendency to claim that the people don't have a right to religious education. It's optional. We see problems with drugs. The drug problem is growing and growing here in Brazil. And religion, the faith principles presented by the faith would be a tremendous help in defending the young, the youth, in regard to drugs, regard to prostitution, of slavery of taking youth to become slaves for purposes of prostitution. Religious principles learned in schools would certainly be a great defense. This is another challenge to the church here in Brazil.
Brazil is preparing to receive young people in 2013. How is the church preparing for the event?
My diocese is in the state of Rio de Janeiro. We're by car about 3 hours from the city of Rio. There are only 10 dioceses in the state. Our state is not among the largest in the country. And so we're in the state of Rio, especially the city, the Archdiocese of Rio. We're all deeply involved in the preparations for the Jornada Mundial da Juventude. It's a year and a bit away, July of next year, but we're already preparing, especially for a week that will be held before. And it was called the Pre-Jornada, but now we're using another title, Missionary Week, Semana Missionaria, in which our diocese in the area, state of Rio especially, closer to the city, are going to receive thousands of young people from other countries, and also youth from the various states in Brazil for a week in which we'll be a week of prayer, a week of missionary visits to various communities in our diocese, encounters. We'll have a linguistic problem, certainly, but a lot of our youth in the diocese are taking language courses. They were already involved with before this in language courses. And I think it will be a great challenge to our youth in the state of Rio to receive those who are coming from Europe, from North America, Africa, from other continents and countries, to see a bit how the faith is lived in Brazil, and how we live our faith on a day-to-day basis.
And thanks there to Bishop Elias Manning of Valença, Brazil. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for listening. Laudator Jesus Christus.